getting paid enough.
All right, I've got 4 o'clock on the dot. I'm going to call to order the April 15, 2024 Rogers Water Sewer Commission meeting. First order is action on the minutes for March 18th.
I make a motion to approve minutes from March.
I second.
We've got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Carry 4-0. Next, we go on to financials.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Howdy.
All right, these are our financials for the month of March. We'll start with billed revenue and consumption. On the water side, we have billed revenue of $1,159,734. That's a 10.6% increase from March in the prior year, with consumption up 13.1%. In the sewer department, we've got billed revenue of $1,365,064. That's a 10.7% increase, with consumption up about 10% as well. For budget to actuals, as a benchmark, the month of March is 75% of the way through the fiscal year. And kind of just like we've seen the past few months here, revenues both on the water and sewer side are tracking above that benchmark. Water at 79% of budget, sewer at 83% without that one-time ARPA grant. And on the expense side, we're tracking below the benchmark, with water expenses at 69% and sewer at 67% of budget. For our year-to-date income or loss, it is income at this point, with year-to-date income exceeding both our FY24 budget as well as FY23 income through the prior period. We'll scroll down here to this summary table and let you see here in that highlighted FY24 column, we've got in the water side income of $4.5 million as compared to our budgeted, our expected income of $3.74 million, and it's about $464,000 more than through the same period last year. And on the sewer side, similar story. Without that ARPA grant, we're at $5.1 million year-to-date income compared to our budgeted income of $3.3 million, and we're tracking about $1.4 million better than this point last year. So those all look pretty good. We do like to highlight access and impact fee revenue, since that's kind of our proxy for growth and development in town. And I introduced this chart last month, and just a reminder, those historical numbers there are complete years, all 12 months, while the number that I'm reporting there for FY24 is, of course, the year-to-date number through the month of March. So you can see we're at almost $1.6 million as combined water and sewer. And then written out there, I'm explaining more that those actuals are 74% of our FY23 total and 122% of our FY24 budget. So we budgeted on the conservative side there, which is not a bad idea generally. We budgeted in total $1.3 million, so again, we're pushing $1.6 million with 3 months to go. And then finally, for other reporting items down here, I let you know that restricted and unrestricted assets are at $48.88 million. That's pretty close, but up a little bit from March of last year, where we were at $48.29 million. FY25 budgeting is going on right now, speaking of budgeting, and it's a big learning experience for me. I did a fair amount of budgeting in my old gig back in Georgia, but every place is a little bit different, and so I'm getting up to speed with how you guys do it here, and of course your managers and other staff are chipping in. It's kind of an all-hands-on-deck effort. So as scheduled, we expect to be back here next month with a budget presentation for you for the fiscal year starting on July 1. Finance has been coordinating with IT and our vendor over at Tyler as we implement an accounts receivable module that is separate from the regular module that we use for our general utility billing for water and sewer usage. So this is access and impact fees and labor hours and equipment if we've got to charge out for repairs, things like that. Hopefully we'll be wrapping that up pretty soon, and that will kind of simplify what we do each month with the billing. And then we also made our final preparations for our ANRC loan closing, that $31 million. In the month of March, we were setting up a new bank account for our construction fund and signing off on the initial disbursement request, which was about $1.1 million that did go through. Spoiler alert, the loan closed in April last week, and again, a $31 million note. And we'll start using it. That concludes the report for March. Any questions?
Numbers look good. Thank you.
A lot of details for these summaries. Let's see.
Down there somewhere.
Yeah, it'll be here. There we go. So, again, we're tracking fine for our DMR reportables. I haven't gave you guys an update on our progress on our new permit. So far, we have reviewed that and sent it back. I went to a meeting that included ADEQ guys that would be in the decision-making process, and they acknowledged that ours was ready to go public, but they just have not yet. They did not say why. So anyway, that's sitting down there and ready for public comment whenever they decide that we are being so blessed. Fog program, Amber's still doing a terrific job there. She took our updated fog ordinance to the city council, did a fantastic job there. I've heard from several people there. So she represented utility well, as I knew she would, but that has become a part of our city ordinances now. Got a few replacements. You can read the more specifics. Nobody's griping too hard right now on the fats, oils, and grease. She's been going along with Paul to learn his trade still, and you can see what she's went with him there. And if you compare that to his, it's pretty much 100% of his visits on this trip. Our surcharges. For CBOD, TSS, ammonia, and phosphorus are listed there for the various users that entered into surcharge areas during the year. You can see what that is year to date. It's tracking pretty close to what it was previous year. Not a lot significant happening here. We did indeed finish hauling our solids to the landfill to get us caught up. Operations supported us with a dump truck that we were able to use to do that. And our employee that transferred from field over to the plant is Robert, and he did a good job with his CDL, so we were able to do that in-house. It did, however, slow his training a little bit, but we've got time this month, and he's already involved in looking at that. So he'll be ready for this winter whenever we're shorthanded again. We did treat 289.5 million gallons in March. Should have been about 263.5 without any rain. So that's about 26 million gallons from INI. only 2.4 rain over six different events, so clearly a pretty dry March. Anybody have any questions for me?
Next, Todd.
Brian. Brian's back.
Good afternoon. I left one of my staff members here for all the big asks last month, so I'm here to do the easy part. Interior report for April, just a kind of an overview of our plan review. I just kind of snipped out the large-scale developments here that we're looking at. We had a lot of other smaller track splits and remodels and things like that. But some of the major things that came in this month of note, a couple of pretty large hotels. We had a Hotel Ben up at Northgate Road where all that development's going on, north of Pinnacle there. But also another hotel and event center is the where is that? That's going to be the Temple Live project right here. So that's going to be about a 2,000 person event center and 16 story hotel just south of the 10 story office building where the Ruth's Chris Steakhouse currently is. So that's going to be a really high visibility project. A couple of other things of note, Infinity dealership, another car dealership going on in just on the south side of Volkswagen, there between Walnut and Oak. Pinnacle Village Phase 2, that's some townhome infill, so we're still seeing the townhome trend. Really no new large single family subdivision. So a lot of commercial development and townhome additions. So. For the project status, just highlighted some change in status. The Mount Hebron interconnection, we do have a proposal from Garver Engineers that I'll present at this meeting that'll move us into the design phase. So I'll present that a little bit later. We do have three projects that are currently out to bid. These are all driven by city street projects, South 28th Place and 28th and Pleasant Grove Roundabout. This is the one that was out to bid last month and they didn't receive any bids, so it was rebid this month. So then West Poplar Street improvements from 1st to 8th. This is the street reconstruction. We'll be going along with that project and replacing most of the water and sewer along that corridor. We do have water line that runs east and west along that roadway, which will most of that will be replaced. The sewer is a little bit more minor of a scope for us, since most of them are sewer crossings and intersections. Then West Oak Street improvements from 52nd to Dodson. This is a new roadway alignment that'll connect that Horse Barn Road area out to Dodson. And so these will all be a utility extension for us and not a replacement. So I'd say out of the three of these, West Poplar is going to be by far the costliest and most intensive project on this list. So we hope to be presenting those next month. Little progress on Pinnacle. We have all the pipe pulled through the golf course. We're setting the last manholes that are going to be in that in the area where there's a potential to disturb play. And this is that area where we have the ductile iron pipe under the road. We had to step back and directional bore this piece. Most of our efforts this last month have been on restoring the golf course. I will say that it's there's been a little bit of tension. We've got a contractor who's not so detail oriented, and the country club is very detail oriented. So we've had to spend some time out there and make sure everything gets restored as it should. But as of this week, I think everybody's still friends and we're moving forward. So that is progressing. We will be pipe bursting the remainder, which is outside of the course of play, and still behind some of those homes in Pinnacle over the next couple of months. And so we'll be starting from this area over here across the pond, back alongside some of these homes to Champions Drive over here over the next few months.
That's the last construction that's in the
field.
In the areas of the golf course play. So we're not going to be holding out any kind of rounds of golf or anything any longer. That's a significant cost.
We'll still be a bit visible, but at least we'll be out of bounds.
and the person doing the renovation on the fairway, they're guaranteeing us and Pinnacle that it will be ready by the LPGA. That looked kind of rough.
We should be out of their way. Well ahead of the LPGA. I think the big concern with the country club is that the turf is established and it looks consistent by the time that big tournament season starts. And so, ideally we would have been here about a month and a half ago in under ideal conditions. We got to it a little bit late, so they're rushing to get that cleanup done.
You're hitting the growing season now, so it should take off now. Mm-hmm.
If you talk to the turf management
guys, it was 2 months ago, right?
They'll say mid-March is when we should have had this on. So we're getting it down. So just a little update on the capacity improvement project. We've been working through this with Freeze and Nichols. They provided some hydraulic studies and identified some bottlenecks. And so we had a virtual meeting last month to kind of look at some piping options that might give us a little bit more flow through those biological treatment processes and into the clarifiers. And we've had some pretty lengthy discussions about the best way to do that, and whether or not train four is going to be needed in the future. We're pretty our engineer has found that we can push all the flow we need to meet future demands. However, we won't have enough if we need to take one train down and rebuild it. So, those are kind of things that we've been discussing. Also, looking through some of the technology options, we did take a visit to Southwest Missouri last month. Todd and I and a couple of his staff out at the plant to look at these filtration technologies. This is an aquadiamond system that would replace our sand media system that would save us a significant amount of backwash water that's coming back to the head of the plant and provide a lot more capacity for the footprint that we have available. So this is one of basically two options we're looking at for filtration, and it's just kind of an example of some of the technologies that we're evaluating. And we should have a conceptual design report, sometime early summer. And so once we have a chance to look at that and mark it up, I would expect that we'd bring that to you at some point this summer for a presentation. That's all I have for engineering, unless there are any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
First field report. So this is out. The big talk was the 48-inch Bentonville line. And Rogers supplying Bentonville with water. The we got a few pictures. Brent was in contact with him a little bit more than I was during the whole process, but he got a couple of good pictures here, and Peter had a couple of good pictures of the boar head and sitting in the pot from that night. The one thing that I want to do is commend our team for the work that they put in, especially Mark and Armando. They put in a lot of extra hours because they are our SCADA department, monitoring and, just being sure that all of our water towers were, everything was going good, that there was no worries on our side, that the sleepless nights wasn't that sleepless. We had them on there, and they were doing a good job taking care of everything and monitoring and everything really well. Staying in constant communication with Bentonville and them working together with their tower guys over there to be sure that everything was going good for them too. And that meant a lot, because just a few weeks before that, we'd run that test pilot thing with them to get the other leak fixed and it didn't go too well. And, when we got to that 26th hour mark, we all kind of tensed up and thinking, okay, hold together, and it did. So, but I think it was a lot I know it was a lot of work that those two guys put into it and what Bentonville's guys put into their side of it too, that kept that water flowing for both cities and everything. And I commend those guys for the work that they did. And I wanted them in here just to recognize them because, like I said, they did do a great job. I got the call. I was on my way to Hot Springs. I don't think I'm ever going to Hot Springs again. It seems like every time I'm down there, something bad happens. So I was on the way down there, and like I said, they stepped in and got the valve shut. The big part was when we went back on, Bentonville went back live, before when we had the other breakdown here on School Avenue. When we went back and shut the water down we went sending Bentonville water, some of the valves got shut down a little fast and we had some water hammer back into our system, which caused us some breaks that night and into the next day. This time we didn't have any of those. They took their time shutting the valves down, being sure that everything was correct as they were doing their work, and that again helped. We didn't have to worry about having all the guys out working breaks in the middle of the night or during the day and everything. So we were ready. All of our guys were on standby. They were ready. They, knew in the drop of a hat they were going to be called in and expected to do whatever we needed to do to be sure that we got those leaks fixed in a timely manner. So, again, I want to recognize these guys for the work that they did on that. So.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Also, I was off Friday, so I didn't get to do this, get this to Brent, but also I have two employees that I want, other employees I want to recognize. I have a new Class 4 water operator, Jeff Harrison, got his Class 4 water, and Tanner Stamps passed his Class 3 collection, so... I did not get those to Brent, and I apologize for that and everything. So, but wanted to recognize them too. That's kind of it for my report. Unless y'all got some questions on that for the repair and stuff, we can answer them and everything. But I think everything, like I said, overall went really well. They got both leaks fixed. Well, they got the repair fixed there, and they also went ahead and fixed the leak in front of off of Dixieland too. That was the previous leak that we run the test on to get fixed. So they got both of those done, completed, and everything. So
very good.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank y'all a million times. He's done it once. He said how wonderful y'all were to work with. And so he every time I see him, he wants me to remind y'all. Thank y'all.
Okay.
Anything else?
All right. So on the end of new business, so we're coming to you because it's time for us to do some resolutions for to waive competitive bidding for our meters. And so resolution number 2410, we would like to recommend to the commission that we waive competitive bidding for our Badger water meters and the AMRS technology for that, and also the Neptune technology meters. The reason we're wanting to waive competitive bidding on two of them is right now, it's like right now I'm struggling to get some 5/8 inch meters, you know, so Badger can't get us any right now, so we're turning to Neptune. They can get them. And the problem is that we're getting them without special pricing because of the not having some agreements with Neptune and stuff. So that's why we're wanting to do this. We want some redundancy in here built in so we can have that redundance where if one supplier can't get us meters, we can turn to another one and we don't have customers waiting without meters and everything. So we had asked that y'all would pass resolution number 2410.
What do we have budgeted for meter purchases every year?
I didn't write that number down. It's a little over about 400, almost about,
That's for replacement of the old ones, of which we still have about 5,000 of those. So another 2 to 3 years of replacement plus just the new
ones. Yep. How are the prices similar?
The price that we started out with Badger, they're all going to, both of them are similar. When 7 years ago when we started with the Badger meters, they were at $105.44. Now they're $137.90. So we have seen the increase, but not nearly like we've seen the increase on everything else that we've been buying.
Yep.
And Neptune, we haven't didn't have a pricing from Neptune. Because we just had it for the larger meters, because that was all we were going to buy from Neptune. But here in this Thursday and Friday last week, struggling to get meters, I talked to Brent, and we decided to.
Very good. I'll make a motion to approve resolution number 2410.
I'll second.
A motion and a second to approve resolution 2410. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed nay. The ayes carry 4-0. Thank you much.
Missing the other one. Or was Itron with the same one? Sorry. So on that resolution also, I did not read the resolution, sorry. I was trying to get around that today, and every time I did, I got a phone call. In that resolution, we're also asking to waive competitive bidding for our Itron connectors, and that's our meter reading component plus our leak monitors that we get. We've had a 7-year contract with them, and we're asking to add that to our Neptune and Badger portion of that. So,
do we need that? No,
it's already
passed.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, I'm sorry. I didn't.
What else you got in there, Johnny?
Okay, I think I've had an exhibit in here. I don't have an exhibit. Okay, so this is, if you recall in our last water master plan, we identified several potential emergency connections for Bentonville. And the low-hanging fruit, if you will, was this Mount Hebron site. We've reserved about 5 acres of land on the north side of Mount Hebron Park that was recently developed for a future water storage tank site. And this is also a location where we have a large diameter 24-inch transmission main that intersects Bentonville's 48-inch transmission main near a location where there's a valve that was installed with Bentonville's main. And so so this is a design agreement to design that interconnection with a metering station to connect Bentonville and Rogers systems at this location with the metering station. The conceptual construction cost we had for this project in the master plan was about $2.5 million. This design contract is for $218,000. That includes survey, geotechnical, environmental, conceptual plan, and some hydraulic modeling and everything. And this will get us into the bid phase of the project. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't know the alignment. I know they haven't finalized it, but I don't even know where they're starting to get off of 112 with their 48 alignment. Does this account for going further to tie to it?
So this would actually be
just the metering portion.
This would be at Mount Hebron Road, which is quite a ways east of 112.
Yeah.
This connection wouldn't have helped Bentonville in this last year.
It does turn by fast lanes there. For some reason, I had it keeping going down 112.
It goes from here west over to 112 and then generally up to I Street.
Yeah.
I Street tank. I believe. I'm not familiar with all of Bentonville system once their transmission main gets up there.
But. Yeah. I forgot that we make the turn west at up there by fast lanes and come under the interstate. So.
But I guess, you know, in general, the thought is, and if you recall all the news reports when Bentonville's main was hit, you know, they asked people to conserve water. And that's because we can supply Bentonville a limited amount of water through those mains up there. In the wintertime, we're fine. We can get enough from Bella Vista through 2-ton, and, you know, Cave can get it from Springdale. They established that connection. But with all the irrigation demands and the growth over there, this is something that both cities are going to need. Bentonville has seen this agreement. They're on board with it. And we do have an agreement for mutual cost sharing on these projects. I don't think they're in a position right now to commit to this contract, but we want to go ahead and get it started.
It's not in this budget, but it will be in the next one, so it's a commitment.
Well, now's a good time, I think, especially with the. What's going on over the last couple of weeks?
I'll make a motion.
Can I amend my statement there? We want to request authorization to enter into an agreement with Garber Engineers for the design of an emergency connection to metering station at Mount Hebron Road at an hourly rate not to exceed $218,000 and allow staff to negotiate the final form and content of the agreement. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, that's fine. I'll make a motion to authorize the staff to enter into an agreement with Garber Engineers for the design of an emergency connection and metering station at Mount Hebron Road at an hourly rate not to exceed $218,000 and...
Permission.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
The hourly rate not to exceed $282,000 is a little ambiguous. That's not a bad
hourly rate. That's
yeah, incredible.
That'd work for that.
The total cost of $282,000 is how I understand it. It's your normal hourly rates.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we pay our attorney.
Those are attorney rates. Yeah. Good rates, but.
Okay. Whatever we just changed it to. I make a motion that we authorize the staff to enter into an agreement with Garber Engineers for the design of an emergency connection and metering station at Mount Hebron Road at a rate not to exceed? No.
Total.
Total. Total. Not to exceed $218,000. And
I believe the chairman said that total fees not to exceed $218,000.
Okay.
At their rates to be established in the contract.
And then final form and content.
Okay, and final form and content. Okay. All right. Whatever we ended up with, that's what I'm making a motion for.
Yeah, I understand the chairman's motion to also include that the staff can negotiate the final form and content agreement.
Okay.
Second.
A motion and a second. All right, I'm going to try this. For staff request authorization to enter into an agreement with Garber Engineers for the design of an emergency connection and metering station at Mount Hebron Road at a total not to exceed $215,000, bless you. And for staff to negotiate the final form and content of the contract. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. The ayes have
it. Hey, Brian, where's the majority of that $2 million estimate in that project? Are they, is that going a ways to connect to? Or what is it that...
About half of that cost is just installing the 24-inch line. I think it was estimated at about $800 a foot at the depth they need to run.
Oh, wow.
There's metering, you know, there's going to be control valves that are that can be operated by SCADA from either city, and so there's some of those costs in there. I think half of it was just installing the pipe, and then the other half was going to be the metering station itself, associated building and valves and everything.
Very good. Who was the contractor, the boring contractor that hit that Bentonville? Was it?
Am I allowed to say that? I believe the reports that I heard was Grubbs, geotechnical.
Really?
It was a geotechnical engineering firm.
Hey, very good.
The next item I have is a task amendment. This is for CEI Engineering. This is an amendment to their contract with the city for construction administration and inspection services. The utility portion of this contract is $56,780 for the water and sewer. We recommend approval of the task amendment by CEI for the Poplar Street Reconstruction, Construction Administration and Inspection. Request authorization of funds to reimburse the City of Rogers in an amount not to exceed $56,780, and also allow staff to negotiate the final form and content of the agreement. Any questions?
Can you scroll down there again? I'm sorry. I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
All right, sorry, Ken, I'm going to need you to scroll up. Let's see if I can get this one. We have a motion and a second to approve the amendment of the task amendment by CEI for construction administration and inspection fees of the Poplar Street Reconstruction Project. Authorizing funds to reimburse the City of Rogers in the amount not to exceed $56,780, and for staff to negotiate the final form and content of the contract. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye is carried 4-0.
Thank you. The last item I had, my inspector, Travis Tripodi, was going to present this, but he is coaching Little League right now. And so these are three inspection forms we'd like the commission to consider. The basic reason that we're going through and creating inspection forms is because a lot of times our guys are called out, something's not ready to be inspected, and so we have to come back, and we're just kind of wasting time. There are fees that are associated with this request form if we have to make multiple trips out to the site. So that's the reason that we're putting these in front of the commission for your approval. So we have a hydrostatic test request form, and it's got this checklist to make sure they're ready for the hydrostatic test. Likewise, a tapping sleeve request form, and also a sanitary sewer testing request form.
If I could add, I think this is important because you've got a lot of contractors working on the Act 49. Every city is a little different. This helps the person on the side, and it helps us.
Do y'all, when y'all have y'all pre-construction meeting prior to kicking off the job, do y'all lay out all your inspection, your re-inspection fees to them? Otherwise, I think it'd probably be pertinent to put what that re-inspection fee is on this so they realize, hey, if I check all these boxes and I'm not truly done with these, here's how much I'm getting charged.
We do, and it's a time and materials thing. So if it's a CCTV, you know, that's a truck, that's a piece of equipment, and two people, and you know, maybe they spent an hour and a half going out there and setting up and started the camera work, and the main's full of gravel, and they can't inspect it or something like that. But it is time and materials. That stuff is all explained in our pre-construction meeting.
Okay,
but the guy that's sitting in the pre-construction meeting might not be the one ordering the test, and they may not be aware of what our expectations are in the field. And so this just kind of clarifies things for the contractor out in the field, and we're working on a method to automate all this, to where all this is in a web form they can check off and submit online, and that's the overall goal. But right now we're gonna be doing it on paper and email until we get.
I just know that a lot of people will go down and just go check, 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 and it makes them think twice if you say, you know, re-inspection fees are $400 an hour up top or something like that. So y'all calculate them time and materials on every one re-inspect fee?
Yes.
So Bentonville does the max that it could be based on the highest hourly rate of, basically my vendor's rate, hourly rate is what we charge for any hours that we're
We do state our hourly fee in our facility extension agreement, and it is more than what our costs are for those employees. We kind of put ourselves in to be competitive with some of the consulting engineering firms as far as our inspection fees.
Just trying to keep. Make this form have a little bit more, not bite to it, but then to realize that this isn't just a check the box so I can call in for inspection. Anyway.
Do we have to approve this? I mean,
yeah.
A form?
I guess I'll make a request. We request authorization to utilize the construction testing request forms as presented, and can I also ask for authorization to adjust the final form and content of the request forms?
Robert?
The main thing the commission will do the past year is amount that's being charged for the retesting of these forms.
If it's time and material, that's.
Well, that can be in the motion, I guess. If you're gonna set that these charges up, they need to be specified. So there's going to need to be a reference to some kind of charge or cost.
And so I guess that would be the time and materials. The time and materials that are stated in the facilities extension contract.
Man, you're making these motions difficult.
I'm letting somebody else.
Question. Do y'all adopt policy in interim? If y'all really want to get that in here, so it's in the final content is what we're seeing, and it references back to the right documents, could y'all adopt this in policy in the interim before next meeting? Or do y'all want to get it in there today?
We can work on it. I'll tell you what. If we want to table this, I can put all these request forms in one overarching policy.
Yeah.
We'll get our ducks in a row and come back to the commission next month.
I think that be easier for everybody.
Okay.
And if it's not a necessity that y'all have to have this today, and y'all can still maybe have this go out in the field, but not necessarily charging fees as of yet until it becomes policy.
But you are already covered for charging retesting, right?
We have the ability to charge, yes. It is covered in our facility extension.
Good deal.
Okay, I will. We'll come back with a policy next month.
It's too bad Travis wasn't here to do that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Right, I come before you with Resolution 2411, approving the sale of the Persimmon Street Elevated Storage Tank site to DRA Properties, LLC. We'll also have to take this to the Rogers City Council for final approval. I think everyone was here, but the Persimmon Water Tower tank has been disconnected from the system for quite some time. It's lower than the others, that's why. So it just functions as a elevated ground storage, if you will. It needs repainting, it needs maintenance, doesn't supply anything that is required on our hydraulic models. Again, so we disconnected it. Our intent was always to demolish it at our own dime, on our own dime. What we found out when we started asking the communications carriers, telling them that it was out of service, which voided most of the contracts, one in particular really, really needed that. And we tried to capitalize on that. We put it out for bid. They're buying the entire street site, which includes the water tower. We did have two people take plans and documents out. We did receive one bid back for $1,000. That $1,000 includes the demolition and haul off of the tower. So they're literally paying us to take the tower down. And in its place, there will be a monopole. Nothing with guide wires and things like that, but the city will dictate what that looks like. But that's where we're at, and staff does recommend this. And again, once it's recommended here, it will be brought up to the city council for final.
I've got two things on this. One, is that date incorrect? It said December 18, 2023. The commission passed its resolution halfway down.
No, we did that quite some time ago to authorize the sale.
2024 is in the future.
Well, yeah.
We're forward thinking.
The commission passed its resolution, yes.
That's for the land. $1,000?
And then also,
it's going to cost them $1 million to take that tower and get rid of it.
I know that the city of Bentonville has done
that's a deal.
We've had some excess fill material that we didn't want to haul off. Years later, we decided, hey, let's ask some dirt contractors if they want some free dirt. They came in and they actually paid the city to haul it off, but they weren't really motivated by time, so they took forever.
This has an 18. We actually had a 24 month in the bid.
Okay.
And they could insert their own, and they inserted 18 months.
Okay, great. Okay. Just wanted to make sure that it doesn't go on and on and on and on. Okay.
No, good question.
Mr. Chairman, you're right. That is a typo. That was the last meeting in December.
2020.
That resolution's passed, so That could be correct about interlineation on the children's side.
Wonderful.
We'd ask for approval.
I'll make a motion that we pass resolution number 2411, approving the sale of the Persimmon Street elevated storage tank site to DRA Properties LLC, recommending approval of the sale to the Rogers City Council and for other purposes.
I'll second.
A motion and a second to approve resolution 2411. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes carry 4-0.
Thank you.
All right. Next, we've got the award of property insurance.
A little small, isn't it? We did put out a bid for property insurance. Our current coverage expires in May, and we normally put that out and see what kinds of quotes we can get on property insurance. We normally do ask for a couple of different quotes. We ask for one with a $10,000 deductible, and for context, we ask for another premium quote with a $25,000 deductible. We also ask for the option of earthquake coverage. Historically, we've taken the $10,000 deductible with earthquake coverage. And before we sent this out to bid, we did update the value of our covered property. We, in the last year, had decommissioned a couple of lift stations, and so we took those off our list. Otherwise, we pretty much used a 5% factor for inflation to represent the value of our covered property. We provided those updated numbers in the bid packet, as well as the list of assets, the buildings, and contents to be covered. And as usual, we got one response back from our current provider, Rogers Insurance, representing Cincinnati Insurance. In the process, we did have a conversation with our broker at Rogers Insurance and with our peers at Beaver Water District. I also traded a number of emails with a company that expressed interest in our account, saying it was a good account, asking about our rationale for maybe going with somebody else, and asking for clarification about what we were currently paying. And that company ultimately did not submit a bid, and what we heard from them was, at the current rate at least, they called it a great low rate and felt they couldn't really compete with that. And that indeed is what we've kind of heard from a couple of different sources now, that Cincinnati Insurance has pretty well cornered this market, and we're getting a good deal. Now, our broker did advise us that we could expect a premium increase, and we do see that reflected in their bid. And you can see there for the $10,000 deductible, they've increased it from $85,000 and change to $98,822. That's a 16% increase in the premium. And the optional earthquake coverage had a minor increase from $818 to $879. Other details of this bid, we were at the end of a three-year term for having the rate locked. And when we spoke with our broker, he indicated that due to the volatility in the insurance market over the past 2-3 years, A, we could expect a premium increase, and B, it might be unlikely that Cincinnati would be willing to lock in their rates for another 3-year term. However, they did commit to that. So what that means is, if the value of our covered property does not increase, then neither would our premium for the next 3 years. So that rate is locked. Next year would be the first year of another 3-year term. Terrorism coverage is included. There's a change in the deductible for wind and hail damage. It's not just the flat $10,000 deductible, but they've got a 1% deductible in here for that. And there's new policy exclusions as well for cosmetic or appearance damage for roofs and roof surfaces. And then exclusions for war and cyber incidents, nuclear, biological, chemical, and radiological hazards. Those last couple of bullet points there, they were described as a nationwide market standard being added to all policies. So a couple of changes, a couple of additional exclusions new for this period. In evaluating just the difference between the $10,000 and $25,000 deductibles, the premium difference is just a little over $8,000. We feel like given the extra exposure for the $25,000 deductible, it's worth it just to go ahead and take the quote for the $10,000 deductible.
Did we have any claims last year?
None last year that I know of. And our history has been very, very minimal for the last 10 years.
Lightning, pretty much.
Sorry?
Usually lightning, I'm guessing.
It's
been minimal.
Yeah.
So the cosmetic and appearance damage to roofs and roof surfaces. So...
Had that happen at our tank on Bolton a couple of years ago when we had the real hard freeze. Yeah. It did the drawdown and it crumpled in the lid of our ground mounted mm-hmm. storage tank. And that was cosmetic and it was not pretty. It didn't affect the function of it. So I don't know if something like that would be covered. But I was thinking the same thing when you read that.
But it does say 521 and 601 South Second. So that's just this building and the next.
Both the exclusion and the 1% deductible are specific to these two buildings.
Okay. So that's not, who decides that? If it's cosmetic or appearance damage to roofs, the insurance company?
Just
trust them. It'll be fine.
Okay. Is anybody else concerned about that?
I'm not sure you have a lot of options, do you?
No, you probably don't, but that seems kind of
snippety. Yeah.
Just out there. To me, but
In terms of I don't know about the cosmetic. I didn't question that too much. In terms of the deductible, I'm kind of taking that to mean that it's not capped at $10,000, right? So, if $10,000 is 1% of a million, I think, then anything over $1 million worth of damage, we'd be incurring more in terms of our out of pocket expense, right?
I would make a motion to approve the bid with the $10,000 deductible.
I'll second.
Motion and a second to award the property insurance bid with the $10,000 deductible and optional earthquake coverage. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Nay. Ayes carried 4-0.
Thank you.
Hey.
This is David. I'm here today to represent the safety committee here at Rogers Water Utilities. And while doing so, I'm representing Resolution 2412. And in this resolution, it's a resolution adopting an employee safety manual for Rogers Water Utilities and for the proposed purposes. Exhibit 1. This is a safety manual that we produced. As a representative of Rutgers Water Utilities safety team, I'm here to discuss the crucial creation and implementation of Exhibit 1, our safety manual. Our safety team has diligently gathered and evaluated how we could bring significant positive change to this organization. One of our primary objectives was to replace the outdated safety manual. The previous safety manual was created in 2008, and it was in dire need of an update to align with the current Arkansas occupational safety standards. We aim to create a new safety manual to reflect these changes effectively. Exhibit 1 results from our efforts, a comprehensive safety manual, and now submitted for your commission approval. And then if I go down further, this is the index. If any of the commission has any questions about any of these sections within the table of contents, I could go into further detail.
I read every word of it. You all did a wonderful job. And I will make a motion to approve resolution 2412.
A second.
Motion and a second to approve resolution 2412 adopting the safety manual. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed nay. The ayes carry 4-0. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice work. Nice work. Important work.
Yeah, it looks like that covered everything.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This is resolution 24-13, resolution amending the employee policy manual for the Rogers Water Utilities for other purposes. Specifically, it addresses subparagraph 13, item B, concerning holiday pay, subparagraph 8, item E, concerning inclement weather, section 10, concerning compensatory time, Section 21 concerning bereavement leave, and Section 30 concerning vehicle use policy. I'll just briefly cover these, provide you with an explanation, just an overview. The added language we're proposing on holiday pay, you see in item 3, lack of prior approval for vacation requests or documentation for sickness will result in forfeiture of holiday pay. Holiday pay is forfeited, then either vacation, sick leave, or comp time must be substituted for the holiday. Just as an overview, when a holiday occurs, our staff understands they have to work the scheduled day before the holiday, scheduled day after the holiday, to receive that holiday pay. They're allowed to schedule vacation ahead of time with supervisor approval. If they're absent for sickness, they have to provide a doctor's note in order to be paid for that holiday. We've had a few instances, not many, where on that day before or the day after, someone has said, I can't be there today. I've got to use vacation or whatever, which does create a hardship for the supervisor trying to schedule the workload that they thought they had staffing to cover. We understand emergencies come up. At the same time, we want to make sure we're being fair to everyone. This would basically say, if you're going to be gone that day, that's fine. We'll use the day you've requested, but you're going to forfeit the holiday pay because it wasn't scheduled prior, and you'll just use some of your benefit time to cover that benefit or cover that holiday. Under inclement weather, the added language would be regular pay for closures shall not be included in the hours worked calculation for determining overtime pay. So if the mayor closes offices, we do provide pay for those hours that we've sent the employees home for. We're just clarifying that does not count towards overtime pay. On compensatory time, the language added would be hours worked on a holiday or weather closure day that do not result in overtime hours for the week may be moved to the comp time accrual bank as straight time hours as long as total paid hours for the week are not less than 40. This policy is actually already in effect. If we have a holiday occur and we have employees working on that holiday, which can happen to keep running to handle on-call situations, at the end of the week, we may have someone with 46, 48 hours of straight pay. In the past, we've allowed them to move anything over 40 into their comp time bank that they can use at future time. We did not have this in our policy. This would add it to the policy and make it official. Under bereavement, we would add family members covered to include step-parents and great-grandparents on both the spouse side as well as the employee side. those situations don't come up very often, but for morale purposes and just doing the right thing, we felt this was appropriate. Under vehicle use, we've added two sections or two specific areas. Under number seven, we've added vaping would not be permitted in vehicles or equipment. Currently, we do not allow smoking or tobacco use. We feel vaping goes along with that. And then number 10, this is already in place, but not in writing. In the event that RWU staff and or vehicles are involved in an accident, it is required management be notified immediately by phone, even if damage is minimal. Management will advise on the next steps to be taken, moving the vehicle, proper follow-up care, drug screening, notifying law enforcement, etc. Those are the recommendations that we're bringing to the commission, and I'll be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Just more of a curiosity, do they give a birthday? What did I read about birthday on the policy?
The employee, we allow them to take their birthday off and we treat it like vacation day. It's a floating holiday, they have 1 year to use it.
That's great.
They don't have to use it on their birthday, but it's a benefit they have. Okay.
I'll make a motion to pass resolution number 24-13, a resolution amending the employee policy manual for the Rogers Water Utilities and for other purposes.
Second.
Motion and a second to approve resolution 24-13. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed nay. Ayes carried 4-0.
All right. Last but not least is a discussion item I had for y'all. I went to Brent and Robert and asked how best to address this. As y'all know, Arkansas's got the law that if you meet with one or more, discuss something with one or more commission members, it has to be of record. So I was going to send out an email to clarify this question I had. And then Brent and Robert suggested that we just tack it onto the end of the agenda. So last meeting, we had some questions, or we had the item on there for temporary provisions for utility services for the area that west of 112 that the city of Rogers is trying to detach and pass to Cape Springs. I had some questions, you know, we allowed staff to approve the final form and content of that. My understanding of that last week was that that was just for the service provision for the existing homes and residences out there. I'm seeing in the resolution now that there are provisions in there for serving future properties that annex in at a future date into Cape Springs, that we will be allowing the extension of Rogers Water Utilities into a different city. While long-term it is going to be Rogers Cave Springs Utilities, for the next 5 to 7 years, it's not. It's ours. We maintain it. We service it. If somebody hits it in the middle of the night, it's these guys that show up and fix it. So I was just under the impression last week that we were talking about serving of existing infrastructure that's in the ground today west of 112. I didn't know if we were agreeing to let staff approve adding on to that infrastructure moving forward, or else I don't think I would have voted the way I did. I wanted to see if y'all understood that the same way, or if I was just hearing things wrong or not reading close enough.
Was this, remind me, this is part of the
land swap,
right? Mm-hmm.
And so that Cape Springs can't service that right now,
right.
Any of it. They don't have water or sewer up to that location to serve it. So we allowed staff to enter into negotiations to serve that for the existing infrastructure that's there until such point that Cave can serve it. So they negotiated timelines for 5 years that they'll serve it water, 7 for sewer. for the existing infrastructure, and we allowed them to negotiate the final form and content. I didn't think that we were necessarily allowing them to negotiate future additions to our infrastructure, RWU's infrastructure, in that 5 to 7 years. And outside of the city of Rogers, it'll be Cave Springs then, and we would allow development to tie on to this existing RWU infrastructure and extend it to we don't know where. I did not think that was part of it. I met with Robert and Brent. I was a little concerned about that because it's still our infrastructure until we pass it over. We do the inspections, we do the maintenance, we do all of it until those 5 to 7 years pass, and then we dedicate it over to the city of Cave Springs if it does go forward. That I just wanted some clarification if you all understood that we were allowing Brent and Robert to negotiate those terms of addition onto the system.
Is everything out there platted already?
No, there's a lot of county land.
How many potential rooftops are we talking about out there?
It's hard to say. There's a big swath that goes northwest that's county. We know right now the 80 acres immediately north is wanting to develop, and that they plan to annex in immediately if this goes into Cape Springs. So that's 300 rooftops like that, and the sky's the limit as far as how far it can go northwest. So we could potentially be extending a lot of our infrastructure, resources, manpower to something that we ultimately would be giving away. I just think it's a bad use of our resources to allow extensions to something that we are doing a temporary provision for serving. I think adding on to that is... It wasn't my understanding that was part of the what we were allowing staff to enter into last week, and I wanted to see y'all's take on that.
We did not discuss it that in depth last time.
No.
And I think I was under the impression it was just what's there.
Serving what's there, and that's how I understood it as well. So that was my hang up on it when I saw that it was allowing extension of stuff that we're not dedicating over 4 or 5 to 7 years.
With the cutoff, Robert?
Mr. Chairman,
yes, absolutely.
My understanding is a little different. The only parcel that I think that was contemplated being served was the Treeflex property.
Okay, so
I didn't. The status of the resolution, it gave the chairman and the superintendent the ability to negotiate the final form of a utility agreement. It'll be the city's agreement too. The status of it, and the resolution didn't have an agenda attached to it, so there's nothing passed except a story to negotiate and enter into it.
So that'll come back before us?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily come back. It's really the city's taking the lead on it, but the chairman and the commission and the superintendent will have authority to sign the final agreement. There was a draft agreement presented at the same time to give you some idea of what is being contemplated here. But the draft agreement only talks about serving what's already there in a transitional period, and the Scissor Tail, or the area north of Scissor Tail, the 80 acres of Three Flags parcel. I don't recall seeing that you can tap on other parcels. I wrote the draft agreement, and it's been being reviewed by the City of Rogers and City Cape Springs. I don't recall seeing anything in there or putting anything in there that would allow further tacking other than the Three Flags parcel. So that's my clarification. I don't think that it necessarily would contemplate ad infinitum adding more parcels that would eventually get to Cape Springs.
Okay. So It's just one parcel, and that one parcel is being served why? Because of the development agreement from...
Yeah, the city of Rogers is proposing to settle the lawsuit against the city and the commission and RWU by providing water temporarily to a three-flex parcel. That's why the three-flex parcel is in the government.
Okay. That just wasn't, I don't think, made very clear to us last meeting that intention was to make a lawsuit go away and that they were going to serve that parcel. Is there any language in there that forbades additional extension of this? Because if it doesn't explicitly say that, I'm worried that it's going to keep going and there's going to be other development in that time. That's wanting to extend RWU well.
There is in the paragraph temporary provision of water service in this draft, except as otherwise stated here, in Rogers will not be obligated to provide water service to any portion of Cave Springs located outside of the planned annexation area. I think there's a similar sentence about sewer.
So it would serve undeveloped properties because there's hundreds of acres that are undeveloped within that boundary. A lot changes in 5 to 7 years and people want to develop. I mean,
there was
5 to 7 years ago, it was...
Hundreds of acres in that land swap thing? I didn't realize it was that much acreage.
So Three Flags has a 40 track on the hard corner of Pleasant Grove and 112. John Simpson owns a 40 track above that. Bart Hester owns the 20 above that. And there's 70 undeveloped north of Bart on Scoggins Road. That's not even mentioning the 80 acres undeveloped that the Three Flags property is getting served. There's a substantial amount of rooftops that can go in there, and that's a lot of infrastructure that could potentially, I mean, in 5 to 7 years,
yes.
Mm-hmm. I have a really hard time not thinking that
yep.
the bulk of that is going to be developed. And I don't think it's wise for RWU to allow extension of its infrastructure into those and us maintain it and inspect it along the way in those 5 to 7 years. And so that's the part that I had heartache with that I was wanting to discuss with the rest of the commission.
Is it... That 5 to 7 years is a hard line.
There's nothing hard about this at all yet. It's still in draft negotiation form. So this body can provide its input to the chairman and superintendents who are listening as well about desires regarding this. And you could pass another resolution specifying what policy this body wants. But this is still a negotiation form. I think it's going to be presented to the city council in May.
End of May.
End of May, the last meeting in May. So, but yeah, this is not, the agreement's not set in stone yet. What is passed right now is authority to negotiate the agreement. The chairman has the ability to provide the documents as that supervisor.
And that's why I met with them. I think they were, y'all, And correct me if I'm saying this wrong, y'all did not see an issue with extending, not RWU extending, but allowing development to extend this, which I disagreed with. So, Brent, did you have a...
Yes. The only thing I'd add is it'll be limited. What our concern was as RWU is to not build any more capacity. That's not going to be ours. If that takes place, they can extend until that lift station won't let them extend anymore. It'll be developers extending, not RWU. And at some point, if they run out of capacity, that's our philosophy.
And Brent, I agree with you to some extent on that. My heartache with it is a lot of that land could just take water and run septic and run, state lots out there. And that's many miles of water line that you're maintaining 7 years is a long time to maintain existing infrastructure that's been there. I remember because I put it in the ground, it was 2015, 2014. So it's already 10-year-old infrastructure. We're saying we're going to take it for another seven, the stuff that's in the ground today, and then extending water beyond that. The capacity of the lift station, I don't think, prevents development of infrastructure through development. I know the RWU is not going to pay for it, but still, you're maintaining it. It breaks in the middle of the night, and like we were talking about during construction, your inspectors are the ones that go out there and have to inspect it. So there's resources and time and money that I don't think is well spent or well.
The flip side to that would be access impact fees.
Yeah.
It's on the front end when it's still new, and you're shifting that over to somebody else. So in some ways, they're getting the short end of the stick.
They're getting the old infrastructure. Yeah. So if we still have the ability to, and just for transparency, since I do live out there, I probably will abstain from being the chairman that signs off on this with Brent. I just wanted, I don't know, I wanted to bring it, we didn't have a ton of discussion on it in detail like this last time, and now that it was kind of a fast-moving thing, Brent didn't really have much heads up on it either, and once it started to take form, it's been really fast. So we just didn't have all the information last time I think we have now, or the time to think through it. So I just wanted to bring that up, make sure that y'all were involved in some of the conversation we had and some of my concerns on.
And this is not going to city until the end of May?
May 28th.
May 28th.
Yeah, that's correct. That's what I understand that the secretary plans to bring it up. I mean, it's being reviewed now. There's been exchange with the attorney for the city of Cave Springs. He has a few comments back on it, but it has not been approved yet. It'll have to be the entire agreement. But just to let you know again, you've authorized the chairman and the superintendent to sign the final form. So you have instructions for them. You may want to give them to them, but that's the status of the litigation. Or that's the status of the legislation. I apologize.
What are y'all's thoughts?
My thought is, speaking totally for myself here, being that there's no emergency fire on this, I would like to dig in a little deeper for my own homework.
Okay.
And relook at that. I was viewing it more from the lens of that three flag parcel. I need to revisit that.
And check out that frontage along 112. There's quite a bit of undeveloped. I've talked with most of those property owners, and I think that in that time frame, Bart Hester is the only one that's not really wanting to develop all his property. He's got 40 acres that he lives on. He said he expressed to me interest in developing the front 20 and keeping his back farm the way it is. So I think the time horizon of 5 to 7 years, potentially all those could develop. So it definitely changes the how we look at it in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Well, yeah. I think that's a good plan. Is just circle back on this by next meeting.
Revisit discussion at the end of the meeting next time.
Okay.
Something.
Yeah. And before we adjourn, I see we've got two. Citizens in here. I don't know if they want to speak or have any questions for the board, or if they're just in here to listen. And you can address, or you can come up to the podium and say your name and address, and then I think we do 5 or 3 minutes, Brent, on speaking time. Typically. So yeah, you can.
Thank you. First of all, amazing what you guys do dealing with water services and water tanks and emergencies and closing up holes that suddenly show up. So congratulations on the great work that you do. I'm a resident of Scissortail. One of the things that we're all trying to understand, this is called an emergency. That this is an emergency annexation. And our understanding of emergency is that it has something to do with water and sewer. And I'm curious whether anybody in the room here could help us to bring, since this is the Water Commission, if some of you could give clarity if that's the case, or if we haven't yet dug far enough to understand what the emergency portion of the annexation is about. So, because that's what's moving this as quickly as it is. And we want to make sure that our rights as residents of Rogers are being represented, and this emergency clause may be accelerating this such that our rights won't be fully represented. So that's my key question.
Sure. And speaking for myself, I would like to, that they'll be part of my homework between now and the next meeting. But
okay,
thank you for bringing it to our attention.
Robert, could you clarify a little bit more on that? Is that a standard clause used? I've done a lot of annexations from both sides of the fence, and I've never seen that emergency clause utilized.
Emergency clauses are often utilized at Rogers to make the legislation go. Take immediate effect, so.
Not three readings?
No, the Rogers City Council usually waives the three readings.
Okay.
But the emergency clauses pass a lot of ordinances at Rogers. So I'm not aware of any information about the water and sewer portion being an emergency. My impression is that, you know, it's an orderly process that this could be negotiated for a transfer of water and sewer services. I think that's just a piece of legislation, an aspect of legislation that the city of Rogers.
Will you look into that for us and find out a little bit more if it is water sewer service related with the Rogers attorney, or if it's just something that's a standard method that they use to pass legislation?
I think it's a standard method. I'm not aware of any emergency rent.
Okay. No, I've seen other cities do it. I remember Springdale had an emergency to build some sidewalk. Can't imagine what necessitated that, but
I think we appreciate it. Thank you for being here.
Okay.
All right.
With that, we will adjourn the April 15th, 2024 Rogers Water Sewer Commission meeting. Thank